Hey, and welcome to Builders, a podcast from BetaWorks Studios about the amazing people who build things. The makers and the doers, not just the talkers. The people that are helping shape the world we live in. My name is Layla Aweda, and I'll be your guide. In Builders, we bring you a diverse mix of thinkers and leaders from the startup ecosystem. All of the shows are recorded live at BetaWorks Studios, our club for builders, located in the Meatpacking District of New York City. If you want to know what a club for builders really is, just visit betaworks-studios.com to learn more. But these podcasts are a pretty good reflection of life in studios. One week, it might be a discussion on crypto. The next, on how technology is affecting music festivals. In this episode, we look at future technology and how it might affect brands and the marketing industry. You'll hear from Susanna Applebaum, head of creative at Google, Dan Bennett, chief worldwide innovation officer at Gray, Alex Magnin, head of revenue at Giphy, and Richard Ting, global chief design officer at RGA. And our very own James Cooper is your host for today. This session came out of one of the BetaWorks Studios rituals, Frontier Tech Live, a session we hold every Friday at lunchtime, where we discuss some of the underground technology coming around the corner that we think may make a big bang or might affect society in an interesting way. James thought it would be interesting to look at some of this frontier tech through a specific brand and marketing lens. So you'll hear about some fun new tech, but we'll also go a little deeper into some of the technology that big companies are building for brands to use. This is Sue from Google.
What we've been working a lot at Google now is assistive experiences, which is actually really nice. It's about time for advertising to become really useful and stop interrupting people. So a lot of the experiences that we are doing revolve around Google Assistant and voice experiences.
Okay, so first off, you'll hear from James with five bits of tech we've seen here at Studios, and then he'll be joined by the panelists. Enjoy the episode.
This is our latest product. So this space is a product. BetaWorks Studios is our first hardware product. And really the driving force around this was this notion that there are all these builders out there, there are all these people that are making products, but they don't necessarily have a space to convene. The technology that was supposed to be connecting us is actually making us feel a lot more lonely. So we made this space for people to gather, talk about stuff they're building, and generally like the sort of startup ecosystem in New York and beyond, and anyone that's interested in that area. And our kind of whole thesis is to make members and guests, turn them into better builders. And so we do sessions like this, we do evening sessions, we do talks, we have what we call weekly rituals, and we connect members. One of the weekly rituals that we have is this thing called Frontier Tech Live. And so we meet every Friday in this room here, and we talk about technology that we think is interesting. And really that was the sort of genesis for this talk, because I sit in those meetings every Friday and there's all this cool technology that, you know, maybe is never even gonna see the light of day, but I'm like, ooh, that would be really interesting for a brand, because my background is sort of creative director for 15 years, and I guess you just can't sort of take that out of me. So when I see this stuff, I'm like, oh, that would be great for XYZ. So then I thought, okay, I'm gonna actually put an event together based on some of this stuff. I'm gonna invite all these cool people because they'll make it better, and we'll talk about that. So I'm gonna do five really quick things that we have talked about here in BetaWorks that I think could be relevant to brands. So hands up out of you guys who looks at their public Venmo feed or their Venmo feed. So I would say maybe quarter, third, decent amount. You know, we have been talking about this idea of Venmo being the best social network because it's public, it's not curated. Like, you can't put a filter on a purchase. It's very real, you can't fake it. And it's incredibly informative. It's in order, it's chronological. You know, there's like, everybody's like up in arms about, you know, chronology. And it's incredibly simple. I mean, they push you to use emojis, which gives you that sort of sense of like intrigue as well. Like, what does that actually mean? A third of stuff is for drugs as well, by the way, which is kind of fun. And so we're seeing a decline in what we would call traditional social media, especially among young people. But the appetite for like the right social media is still there. You know, this idea of like wanting to know what your friends are doing is still hugely relevant, and I don't think that's going away. And so for me, I think there's a really interesting opportunity for a brand to insert themselves into that conversation, because, you know, Venmo is transactional. So when you're talking about buying things from brands, you know, why not be in that space? You know, the reason that Venmo works is because it's real. And, you know, right now we are spending all this time trying to figure out in our feeds what is real and what is not real. And this is something that we call synthetic media here. Really, it's something we've been watching for a long time. If any of you guys ever got the 2014 Betaworks book that I put out, we actually wrote a piece on Russian bots infiltrating Twitter for propaganda. We called it media hacking in 2014. And, you know, lo and behold, that becomes, you know, what we now know is this sort of shitstorm fake news and, you know, helps get President Trump elected. You know, this is a trend that's been going on and going on, but it's been getting much more complex in the last year or so. Two examples. So some amusing person wrote a paper called Dank Learning. This is all about this idea of neural networks creating synthetic memes. And so it just spouts out all of these memes. And we played a game here where we tried to figure out what was a real meme and what was created by this neural network. And to be honest, it was like a 50-50 night. No one could really figure it out. And then one of the other things that we've been keeping an eye on is this thing called deepfake video portraits. And, you know, there have been fake video technology for a while, but what's happened recently, it's all to do with the lips, apparently. Like, DARPA has this way of figuring out whether a video is fake or not based on lips, and now the technology can move the lips in a way that basically fools DARPA. So you're at a situation where you can create these videos where anyone is talking about anything. So, yeah, that's kind of scary for politics if you have, like, Obama saying, you know, whatever the hell you want them. But what could that mean for brands? It means that potentially anyone could be your spokesman, which is kind of interesting. And then, you know, as humor, like the humor in memes and the humor on the internet is now so esoteric. Like, who owns that humor? And could you tell the difference between a human writer and a bot? And, you know, what does that mean for creative departments and the people that sort of traditionally own that idea of humor? Another thing we've been watching is motion capture, which, you know, Amazon, Google, Facebook, Disney, they're all spending money on motion capture, but it's not huge money, but it's all there and it's all happening and it's sort of flying under the radar a little bit. But I think the end result is we're seeing a shift from the very traditional green screen and marker technology to, you know, if you're in production, you've all been using for the last decade, to quicker markerless technology, video to video capture, so basically taking a video and then extracting that, all the way through to machine learning. So you can now have a situation where you have 5 minutes of someone dribbling a basketball, for example, and the machine learning can then say, okay, I've taken that and I'm going to extrapolate what that looks like, and now you've got an hour of this person dribbling basketball because I've learned what that looks like. And so for me, or anyone else that's sort of been through countless green screen shoots for production, it's, you know, they're incredibly time consuming. They're incredibly boring for the people involved. Like, I remember shooting something for Sony Ericsson for a tennis game a long time ago with, back then, Anna Ivanovic was like the number two tennis player. I had her for a day just like, again, like, expensive, boring for her. So if you could do 5 minutes with a Serena or a Neymar, and then the machine learning just figures out what the rest is doing, then I think that's a hugely interesting opportunity for sort of digital creative to be a lot more ambitious with their productions. Podcasting. So yeah, we've been watching this for a while. Like I said, we invested in Gimlet very early on. So Gimlet is kind of like the HBO of podcasting. They have Startup, Reply All, Crime Town, etc. The Anchor, the podcasting platform, was birthed literally in this room. you know, there's, we see a huge potential in podcasting, especially with regards to brands and advertising. So it's on a huge growth, but it's 0.15% of ad spend at the moment. There are a couple of reasons why we think this is interesting. You know, one is that brands are becoming more upset, I think, with Facebook. You know, Facebook ads have become more expensive and the practices are, you know, not as open and transparent as they used to be. So I do think we'll see a shift back to sort of traditional TV and outdoor media and things that people trust. But again, you know, those things are relatively expensive and relatively long lead time. So, you know, one of the reasons that Facebook works is cheap and you get results really quickly. But the same could be said of podcasting. So, you know, you can put out a podcast in about a week and you can get your results back really, really quickly. So we think there's, you know, right now the formats are fairly, I think they're sort of still being worked out. You know, you can basically have a traditional radio ad, you could have a presenter on podcast do a read or interview someone. But I think there's a ton of scope for more creative executions within that. And then the other thing is that entertainment companies are looking at podcasts. So Startup got turned into a TV show. Homecoming, which is one of Gimlet's other shows, is now about to launch as a Netflix original series, or as Amazon, I think it's Amazon original series with Julia Roberts. So this idea of like testing an idea in a relatively cheap format, i.e. podcast, and then turning it into a movie or a TV series is kind of interesting. Last but not least, Chat Roulette is back. Does anybody remember Chat Roulette? So Badoo is a European dating app, site, basically Europe's Tinder. And they are replacing the classic swipe with video dates. The idea being that your dating profile is relatively likely to be authentic, but even more so if you're forced to have a video chat with someone. So the idea being that it feels more authentic than just texting someone. It sort of stops catfishing. You know, this is really interesting. Like, so we just launched our fourth accelerator camp. So far we've had Bot Camp, Voice Camp, AR Camp, Vision Camp, which is AR Camp, and we just launched Live Camp. And we are very interested in this idea of synchronicity. Like, what does live mean? Like, how are brands going to interact in this live space? So think of HQ or Twitch or even something like Peloton. Like, how are brands going to interact with that? Okay, so enough of me. Guys, come up on stage. I'm delighted to invite these guys to come on. I think, you know, it's a really good diverse mix of thinkers and doers. One of the things that I noticed when I was putting this together, because you got half tech and half agencies, and look at the people in tech, Sue and Alex, smiling, happy. I don't comment, I merely observe. So
I look like I'm about to cry.
Yeah. So we got Dan from Gray, Sue from Google, Alex from Giphy, and Richard from RGA. Please welcome, give them a hand. So we're going to talk about stuff that they are building and stuff that they are working on that they think is interesting and things that are coming around the corner that they've got their eyes on. So we'll start with Sue and Alex from a sort of technology point of view. Sue, ladies first. Okay. What are some of the things that you're working on at Google and how they relate to brands and what are you excited about at the moment?
Okay, first let's get things right. I'm not tech, I'm creative. Yeah. And I translate tech creativeness.
I'm
going to sound come across really stupid here. But I have a creative technologist having my back here, keeping me honest. So what we've been working a lot at Google now is assistive experiences, which is actually really nice. It's about time for advertising to become really useful and stop interrupting people. So a lot of the experiences that we are doing revolve around Google Assistant and voice experiences. which is really cool because really it's an opportunity for brands to play a meaningful role during their client's day. And every brand can really play a role, can have own something about their personality that can make a difference in a person's life. The issue with that, though, is that now everybody wants an assistant experience no matter for what. So that we are going the same problem when we had apps. Remember, everybody wanted an app because it was available, because you could do something, but people are not going in depth there. But we do have a few examples of assistive experiences that are super nice, and they span from entertaining to just useful. So I'll give you a couple examples. We did recently for Westworld. How many people saw Westworld here? Cool, so I don't need to explain the whole story. So, but I don't, do you guys know about Aiden? The person who created knew about it, she's there. So Aiden, we've created a chatbot experience. It's actually, like we created a host of the show that you could talk to 24/7 to know more about what was going on in the park, and you could get like Easter eggs and learn more about the show. And you could also talk to Aiden on Google Home. It was a pretty amazing experience. The fans could keep engaging and knowing more about the show and in between the episodes and bridging the first season with the second one. And this was an amazing experience that was a crazy retention. People went crazy on Reddit. And this experience, it was actually really funny because HBO wanted this tech to help launch the season one and launched Aiden. But then for the second season, they actually were like, you know what, this was so cool. We want to keep working with you. So now let's do, is there something with a YouTube influencer that we can do to launch season two? So we got so much trust of them that he was even like, okay, I can now talk about YouTube. And this piece on the assistant, it won an Emmy Award. So it was a super cool achievement for us. That's a nice example of how to use it for entertainment. For utility, there are different things we have been doing. One of them that was not done by my team, but that we really like, Johnny Walker had guided a tasting experience that you could know all about whiskey and do the tastings. Another example, it's really interesting actually when you can take advantage of the voice. So if you have to keep your hands busy, that's when the assistant plays an important role. So if it's a product, for example, about hair dye, you need to know how to dye your hair. It's going to give you instructions and you can keep your hands dirty, or it's about cooking. So these kinds of experiences are pretty cool and growing, and it will only grow. And voice is really going to become the most natural way that brands will communicate. We will be communicating to get services. There's just one more.
Sure.
And another thing we've been experimenting with is AR. Like lens is a huge thing. We cannot like do branded experiences with lens right now, but there's a lot of AR experiences that we can do with AR Core that pretty much do what lens do, like read the world and give you some really interesting experiences. So one experience that uses computer vision that is really cool that we did for a beauty brand is that you can point your phone, for example, I can point my phone to her lips and know what color is her lipstick, and then I will decode it into a, let's say, L'Oreal product. So there are things that we brands can already do. They are really interesting. And we've been also pushing to understand like how to bring augmented reality experiences to posters, to ads. So this is where it's going.
Awesome. Love it. Voice.
Voice.
Yeah. Alex, Mags. Can I call you Mags?
Please.
Yeah, Mags. He's not Alex, he's Mags. What's Giphy got cooking up? Upstairs?
Most of the time, I'm just dreaming about making ad products as good as Google. But what my team works on is building a set of products and services that allow brand marketers to access all of the consumer behaviors that are powered and enabled by Giphy. This is searching for gifts, sending gifts to your friends, creating gifts, using gifts to talk about whatever's happening in the moment or the cultural zeitgeist. What's cool about that, in my view, is it allows brands to access a massive user behavior that you know, before now hasn't really been accessible via ads, and that's messaging. So 70% of all Giphy use is happening inside of one-to-one and private messaging apps. So think about our iMessage keyboard extension, WhatsApp, Facebook, all of these places that have that little GIF button. And you know, within those apps, we see in the neighborhood of 650 million unique queries per day. So people searching for GIFs, generally with the intention to like send a funny gift to your friends, you know? And so the opportunity, the obvious ones are for someone like a Taco Bell when people search hungry, which happens over a million times a day, to promote a Taco Bell gift. So in some ways, what we built, one of our products is effectively a rudimentary version of AdWords for gift search. The reason that we believe this really has legs is that we all know all about the story of tons of time being spent on these bad boys, right? But if you break down the way that time is spent, the average American is spending about 60 minutes on feed-based broadcast social networks, right? And American marketers spend $15 billion annually there. The average American is spending 30 minutes on the mobile web, right, in the browser here, and that's $10 billion of annual ad spend. The average American is spending 45 minutes in one-to-one and private messaging apps, and there's effectively zero advertising there, right, no access for marketers. And GIFs are already there as this native content form that we're sending at massive scale. Facebook Messenger last year announced that that they're powered by Giphy, that on New Year's, users sent 400 million GIFs on that app alone. So you have scaled behavior inside of a scaled you know, user space and no ads. And that's what we're going after.
All right, Rich, what's interesting in your world?
Yeah, so there's a lot of interesting things happening at RGA. We are currently working on a Super Bowl spot. We just launched a new bank for Bradesco down in Sao Paulo. We are launching a new website, fully commerce enabled for a footwear company, not Nike. But I'm not gonna focus on those three because those three projects are kind of like the meat and potatoes of an agency. We do a lot of big commercials, big website builds, big mobile application projects. I think since we're talking about frontier tech, I'll focus a little bit more on frontier tech. So we recently did a project for Cooper Hewitt where we leveraged computer vision, and the computer vision partner that we worked with was a company called Clarify. So Clarify came out of one of our RJ Ventures programs, and we've been working very closely with them on a few projects. The Cooper Hewitt app was really interesting because consumers that were going to the Cooper Hewitt exhibit could actually just use the app that we built to scan the artwork inside the space. And as soon as the app would scan the artwork, it would give you information about the piece that you were looking at. So if you think about that use case and you apply it to sneakers, you apply it to clothing, you apply it to cars, all of a sudden, computer vision becomes this thing that could actually connect consumers with objects in the real world. So we're excited about the Cooper Hewitt thing because that's the foundation that we're going to build off of for other types of computer vision projects. But I think computer vision is just one of the frontier techs that we're interested in. There's so much interesting stuff happening these days. I think voice is tremendous. A couple people on the panel talked about voice. So we recently launched a bot for the Cosmopolitan Las Vegas called the Rosebot. And we built that bot on top of a platform called Reply.ai. Once again, another RJ Ventures portfolio company. And we're starting to integrate more advanced features into the Cosmo Rosebot. Hopefully that eventually turns into voice as well. I was reading a case study this morning about the Erica Bank of America chatbot. They have 3 million users, which is amazing. Like, if someone said to me a few months ago that, hey, a bank's gonna launch a chatbot, and within a few months they're gonna have 3 million users, I would have said no way. So I think this insight that voice is like the next interface, I think that is a real thing. So from where I sit, computer vision is really interesting. Chatbots and voice are really interesting. Synthetic media is really interesting as well. We looked at a company when we were recruiting startups into our Verizon Venture Studio. We looked at a startup called Automated Insights. And what they do is they essentially create synthetic content around just articles. So if you're someone like the Associated Press or ESPN, and you're just writing kind of like these small pieces of copy, there are companies out there that are doing that. And I think from where we sit inside the agency world, a lot of our clients have to figure out ways to connect with consumers on a daily basis. So from an agency standpoint, we just don't have the manpower, the women power to create that content. They call it content velocity. There's no way that we could support that content velocity using the staff that we have. So looking for technology that's out there that could help us create synthetic media to augment some of the teams that we have inside the agency, I think that's something that we're really focused on. So frontier tech is so exciting right now. AI is really interesting. Augmented reality is really interesting. Voice, the list goes on and on. Yeah.
Awesome. Thanks. Dan?
These chairs are terrible for my posture.
Sorry about that.
It's my first complaint of the evening.
Take it out with the management.
I will afterwards. A couple of things. It's actually a little bit difficult to talk about some of the brands in question, but there's one thing. One of the things we're, it sounds so obtuse, but we're working on is this near-field radiation technology, right? So, you know, deal with that, Google. But so for one of our clients, and this was actually an ongoing project that only started about 10 months ago. This is ongoing. But what I love about this is actually the least sort of techie thing you've perhaps heard yet is one of our clients is a large hospital network, and one of the main business challenges they face is injured nurses in particular, because they walk so far, and they're the most injured employees in the country. They get terrible knee and hip and ankle injuries, etc. So one of the things we've partnered with a small startup on is this thing called near-field radiation technology, which is actually a naturally occurring ceramic powder that we're working with those guys to embed into insoles. So if it's close to your skin, it provides a little bit of heat, and it helps with relaxation of muscles and circulation and those sorts of things. When I first got there, it was sort of, it's a relatively small project for us, but I think it's one of the sexiest, most interesting things I've heard for a while, because it ties directly into the idea of meaning, right? So to be quite romantic about this idea for a second, I think fundamentally in advertising, we struggle with really finding meaning. In fact, we were touching on it earlier when we were talking about GIFs, right? Like, it's really easy for a brand like, or it's quite easy for a brand like Game of Thrones to develop a GIF pack, because it's Game of Thrones, right? It's dragons and stuff. But it's, you know, it's more difficult if you're, I don't know, deodorant, right? So ultimately, we still have to find new ways of finding meaning in those environments. And so the reason I set that up is the two things that interest me the most right now, and I'm actually fascinated in them, is one is sensors, right? So I was with your guys in Mountain View, and there was a chap there from ATAP, and he was talking about, he called it fifth wave computing, but I've heard it called ambient computing, and it's ostensibly the next wave of the Internet of Things, right? The fact that everything's going to have sensors in. Everything's going to have sensors in. And we won't know what does and doesn't. In fact, we won't care what does or doesn't have sensors in. The point is that future of 160 billion connected things is going to be wholly owned by brands. Right, so it's not going to be owned by Apple, or I mean, they'll be made by these people, but it will be owned by brands. So when that happens, and I opt into a brand ecosystem for my breakfast cereal and my milk and my toilet paper and my, how do we think about, you know, communicating that? How do we think about getting people into that and then keeping them? Once it becomes as difficult as moving from, you know, iOS to Android, how do we win that battle? And it was inspiration from your guy, really. It was. I think that room sort of lit up when he said this, that brands will own that future, and that's fascinating. Then the converse to that, to me, which is super interesting, is the idea of this digital wellness thing, or the fact that we need to be connected, but we want to disconnect more. So computers that provide value and get out of the way, which leads us to voice, and it leads us to ambient computing, and there's this sort of life cycle in there. And brands are going to have to live in that space and operate in that space, and that's kind of terrifying and powerful, exciting.
Yeah, we're thinking about that as well. Zentech, we call it.
I like that.
Yeah, you can have that. So Sue, Alex, what are you talked about stuff that's sort of going on now, like project 3, 4, 5, you know, however many years in the future. Like, what are some of the things that you that you're interested about that get you excited?
I'm gonna be very honest. This guy might know more than me about Google.
Like more than you.
Yeah, they reveal little bites for strategic clients. I'm also gonna confess that I'm actually more personally more interested in how to make the most of the technology that we have now than what we will have ahead. Yes, I'm excited about web AR. This is great. This is great because this is like the biggest barrier that brands had to enter the AR world, which is magnificent, was that you needed an app and they just turn off, like people, it is not worth to download. But now with web AR, this will be amazing. But I think that there's so much that we should be exploring with the technology that we currently have. I think we are scratching the surface of, brands are scratching the surface of what can be done with what we have currently with AR, with assistant. There's like, and I think that if in 2 years from now we have like a like great examples of use of these technologies, I'll be happier. That said, also in the low tech vibe, because that we have plenty of tech here, there's something that I am also passionate about, which is YouTube. I find it it's not a high tech platform, but it's a platform that connects people in such a deeper level, emotional level, and I think that if we could evolve it technologically, bringing some interaction actually back to it, because you guys remember we had the gadgets on YouTube, you were able to click on stuff and interact with the videos that you're passionate about and continue your engagement with the brand, with the story. I would love, we are actually pushing it internally to bring back some interactions to YouTube, because video is still like one of the most compelling ways of engaging people emotionally. And if you bring back this, there's so many ideas that we have and I cannot share, but I'm sure all of you guys have ideas of how YouTube could be more interactive and allow people to do things while you're watching a video. This might come in a few years, and I'm really looking forward to it and to helping make it happen.
Awesome. Alex, crystal ball.
Crystal ball. Look, so I can talk a bit about the big ideas that are behind Giphy and how we see those projecting into the future. One of the big ideas simply is that Giphy is a visual search engine. And what does that mean? That means you have a lot of content indexed and a lot of data and metadata about that content. A second big idea is how is Giphy distributed? Well, we have a big website and a popular app and so forth, but we're reaching 300 million people a day via code-level integrations in all of these large platforms, right? And why do we have that? Well, these platforms are in relatively mature states. They're competing for user attention, and they're doing so on features, right? And one of the biggest features of these platforms is cool content. That's sort of why you go, right? And so you combine those two things, and what Giphy is doing is plugging in, again, at a code level, powering features like the GIF or sticker button with all of this content on which we have, you know, a sort of sustainable moat in terms of metadata and indexing and so forth. And you project that out into the future, and what does that look like? Well, the things that we think it looks like are, where are the next sort of killer apps in the emerging spaces that will be built, and what content are they going to want, right? So, like, you build a cool AR app. All right, so I'm looking at the world through some glasses or a contact lens or something. Maybe I get some data, and that's cool, but sort of boring. I see my email, and, like, that's a bummer. But like, what am I going to want? Fun stuff to put there, right? I'm going to want my friends to like leave me a 3D animated dinosaur like in front of the BetaWorks studio door every time I walk by. And so when we think about the model of mature platforms plugging in code level features, and we think about the emerging spaces like AR and VR and layering, that's one of the main things that we're chasing after. You'll notice one of the biggest, most popular places you already see Giphy is in Instagram and Snap Stories, right? You see the stickers. That was a bet that we made long ago when the company acquired another company called Imoji. Those spaces are a place that are already effectively like V0 of AR, right? We were layering face filters and geotags and little emojis and captions over these images of the real world, right? Augmenting our reality. And so you already see that behavior starting at really massive scale. And you know, Giphy's plan effectively is to be way ahead when that experience is the same but 3D.
Thank you. Richard, it sounds like you get a lot of your tech inspiration from the Ventures program, which I think is super smart way of doing it. You know, you know, the more you use them, the more money you make, the more embedded you are, et cetera, et cetera. But are there any gaps? Like, is there anything you were like, oh man, like I wish we could do X?
Yeah, so we launched RJ Ventures about 5 years ago, and in that 5-year process, we have invested in about 100 companies. We've looked at about 5,000 companies in that process. A lot of really interesting stuff in there. I'm super bullish on all the things that we talked about around augmented reality, voice, computer vision, live gaming. All that stuff's going to happen. I have no doubt in my mind that stuff's just going to continue to grow and grow. I think what I would love to see are startups that are actually thinking about privacy and data ownership. We actually met with one of these startups. I'm not going to say who it was, but they're actually thinking about how to manage data and privacy on the blockchain, right? Where in the future, just imagine a future scenario 3 years down the line where all of us in this room, we have our profile on the blockchain and we have all this data attached to it. And you actually have complete ownership of that data. You have complete ownership of how people are accessing the data, who gets to put their marketing in front of you, who gets to put their services in front of you. And I do think that's a need that's missing in society right now. I think right now when I navigate the internet, I go from site to site, I feel like there's a trail of advertising just following me. And you know, I'm partially guilty of that. I work in an agency. We're really good at retargeting and performance marketing. And we understand the mechanics behind that. But at a certain point, I think consumers are probably going to, you know, say, hey, time out. Let's hit pause. My data is scattered all over the internet. I want that data back under my control. And, you know, there's been a lot of pushback with that with Facebook and, of course, the GDPR thing that came out of Europe. So I do think, you know, if there are startups out there that are exploring this space, I think it would be a nice counterbalance to all the other stuff that we've been talking about. So I think that's something that I would love to see. Yeah.
I want to open it up to the audience. You have some amazing thinkers and builders and doers here. What are some of the questions that you would like to ask these guys about either the technology that they're working on or some of the things that they see coming up in the future? Yeah, I think we have, do we have a mic? Yeah, great, thank you. Oh, I thought she was going over there.
Sorry.
So I have a question. How do you think the AI itself will actually impact the design process?
Oh, that's a good one. Is anyone, Rich, do you want to, you're a designer.
So I went to Adobe Summit. I'm sure everyone here in this room is working on Adobe. They have this new platform called Adobe Sensei. Is anyone using that product in this room? So I haven't used it, but I went to Adobe Summit and I saw the product demo for it. And, you know, they showed a use case where a designer was creating banner ads. Very exciting stuff. And the way the Sensei product worked was the designer actually created a banner ad within certain measurements, and then they click the button, and all of a sudden the banner ad got reformatted into three or four other sizes automatically. So I think there are things that AI can do to help a designer become more efficient and to scale their capabilities, but the actual creativity around creating the banner ad, that still comes from the designer, right? So what is the story? What is the art direction? So I do think there's some AI tools out there that can help designers scale. You know, I've seen other case studies out there. Nutella did a project probably about 18 months ago where they used AI to create, I think, 7,000 custom package designs for their Nutella product launch. That was also another scenario where the designer was able to scale his or her direction, set the framework for how the AI was working. So there are some things that are happening out there where you know, the AI is auto-generating work, but it can't happen without, you know, the designer setting the guidelines, setting the concept, setting the art direction, things like that. So that's what I've seen out there.
Yeah, more questions.
I have a microphone. Do we have so mics?
Okay. Louisa.
Sort of in the similar vein of this kind of meta narrative of the symbiosis between humanity and AI, if you will. I had a very interesting conversation with somebody at Google, Natalie Lamb, who I think a few of you know here, about an objective for AI to transcend human creativity and an initiative to explore that as a creative solution, whether it's aesthetic or strategic. I would be interested in your response to that through the lens of, you know, humanity obviously offers that unique unknown quantity, whereas AI might be a little bit more sort of quantitative. Do you think that's a reality, that AI and, you know, computers might replace human creativity?
Never. Never. AI will never replace. And I don't think that's how Google looks at AI. It's. I think the way we see Google exploring AI is always empowering, facilitating, and combining data with human sensibility. So it's always about adding to it and making it more powerful. But there's stuff that sensibility, empathy, creativity, this there's only much a machine can do, can compose a song and can be cool, but that won't take away space from musicians. And there are lots of experiments talking about music, lots of experiments where you see a musician composing one part of it and interacting with the AI, and the AI responds to musicians. But the whole approach is very much enabling, empowering, collaborating, and not replacing.
There's a really good article on I think it's called The Wizard's Hat, on this idea that Elon Musk has about BMI, brain machine interface, and I dug into that a little bit and what that might mean for brands. And, you know, really it's this thought that, you know, we're already part computer. Like, everybody's got a phone in their pocket right now. So the phone is connected to your body. People have been having corrective eye surgery for the last, like, 20 years. At some point, the first person was like, I'm going to stick a laser in my eye. It's kind of weird. And, you know, it's the same with hearing implants. You know, now people have computers in their ears to help with hearing. And again, like, the first time you're like, oh, you're going to stick a computer in your ear? And so Elon Musk, you know, he's nuts, but he's basically like, you know, we're all going to have chips in our head, and the chip will be able to read what we're thinking. And I think maybe where you're getting at is, like, so, you know, if I think about my personal example, like, there's no time when I don't want a Twix. Like, even if I'm, like, sleeping, I probably still want a Twix. So, like, what does that mean for this computer? And then it goes to Amazon, and, like, I wake up every morning and there's 25 boxes of Twix on my front doorstep.
Diabetes,
yeah. I just have to. So I think it's, you know, that's a fascinating thing that I think we're about 10 years away from. But I find, you know, people were like, oh, that's crazy, you'll never do that. But honestly, like the eye surgery and the ear and the way we're connected to our phones, it's not a million miles away. Like Tiger Woods had surgery on his eyes so he could play golf better. He wasn't like, oh, I can't read, so I'm going to have surgery. He was like, I want to hit that ball like over there. So people are already doing this, and I think we're going to see that I think it's going to happen.
Remember Matrix, that the guy puts the chip, I want to learn jiu-jitsu, like in 1 second.
Right, why not?
Imagine, like, yeah,
why not?
So brands could install you.
But it's already happening. Microsoft has an example. Microsoft, I think, call it the leading edge, which is their catch-all for this technology. And they already assume that it's happening in a sense that they have they have cloud computing power in the middle and the leading edge of the outer rings of whatever facility you need to use. So they give a great example for hospitals where they're connecting all these devices. You know, the temperature gauge is checked to the, you know, how many rooms are available. And they're the obvious clunky ones that I can just about get my head around. But when I think about it becoming everything, it's game over unless we have some compelling reason to be there as a brand or help our brands be in those spaces.
Okay, so that was an edited version of our session on frontier technology and brands. Thanks to all of our panelists for doing such a great job. If you want to follow these guys on Twitter, take a look at the show notes. If you'd like to come to the next Frontier Tech Live session, we hold them every Friday here at Studios. Just drop me a line and I can send you a day pass. It's that easy. And there's free lunch. As always, for upcoming events and any other info on Studios, just visit us at betaworks-studios.com. If you want to know more about tech and brands, our episode on building experiences in the age of Instagram is a great one to check out. That episode featured the folks who built the Dream Machine in Williamsburg and some other amazing production companies. The talk got real deep, real quick.
The Sistine Chapel's ceiling wasn't designed to be a selfie moment.
All of these little nuggets and more are available when you subscribe on iTunes and all other listening platforms. Check back with us every Tuesday for a new episode of Builders, and we're now on social media. Be sure to follow along with us and give us your thoughts, feedback, and any suggestions for the future. We can be found on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at BuildersPod, and also hashtag BuildersPodcast for all things Builders. If you click on the show notes description box, it's all there. We look forward to hearing from you. And until next time, I'm Layla Ueda. Happy building from all the Studios team. See you soon.